Hi, I'm Liam O'Rourke. I'm still waiting to find out if I won WCW's Million Dollar Giveaway. I was the guy filming and attacking the Magnificent Seven, and the WWE Network number is an embarrassment to the business. Sincerely, The WOW Pay-Per-View.
I'm Carl Jones, and my comedy routine is about as fresh and hip as Ray Coon's WrestleMania 8 monologue. I've actually been to the physical learning tree which Ernie Ladd used to sit under, and I was going to have a very special intro this week which revolved around Lionel Hutz's wrestling course, but thanks to Chasing's tickets, that's not going to happen there. So for the duration of this podcast, you're not going to get the cheery car you're used to hearing.
I'm Luke Edwards. I bought a gavel for this show! A bloody gavel! What the hell am I supposed to do with this thing?
And I'm Kieran O'Rourke. You may have gathered today was supposed to be the trial of Eric Bischoff. Unfortunately, we've had to cancel that for now. My personal idea was to do something with the WikiLeaks Kate Upton's top 50 or something like that. That has been poo-pooed, and therefore we've got the best deals of all time thing instead. Enjoy!
This is the panel for the 18th Squared Circle Gazette Radio, and you can hear us break down WWE.com's top 50 heels of all time. Next. Hello everyone and welcome to the 18th Squared Circle Gazette Radio. I am Liam O'Rourke alongside Kieran O'Rourke.
Evening.
Carl Jones.
Yo.
And Luke Edwards.
Seriously, I really did buy a gavel. What the hell am I supposed to do with this now? Yeah. I'm not just going to say it. Well, I want to hit something.
I'm very sorry to you, Luke, for buying the gavel. I'm sorry for everyone. Apologies. We did say that this was going to be the trial of Eric Bischoff this week. Unfortunately, due to scheduling conflicts with one of the team.
Yes, there is only one person to blame here, Liam, and he should be named and shamed.
Yes, G. John Chase, who is conspicuous by his absence somewhat. Unfortunately, after vowing that he would be able to make this date, as unfortunately he had a prior commitment. So we have changed the topic, we've changed direction, and there's a something that kind of just jumped up when we were kind of talking about a substitute show, and that was the top 50 heels of all time list that the W.com website put out a little while ago. And I thought this was quite an intriguing list. All their lists are always highly suspect and subject to a lot of ridicule, potentially. And I thought this is something very interesting that we can kind of put our opinions to in terms of the best heels of all time.
Yeah, when we come up with this idea and you sent the list over, I'm perusing through, as typical WWE lists, on first glance, there seems to be no rhyme or reason. So I tried to put a bit of thought in to see how they've come up. Is it WWE heels of all time? All-time wrestling heels?
Wrestling. Their
yeah,
list
I'm not sure about that.
50 wrestling heels in history.
Yeah, I'm not buying that. I haven't come up with a rhyme or reason for the list yet, but let's see if we can get one as we go along, I reckon.
I did have a quick glance at the list earlier in the day. There were a few, let's say, that had me raising my eyebrows. I think there's going to be a lot of conjecture involved here, and I'm looking forward to getting started with it.
I spent most of my day in Cardiff purchasing a gavel from a lovely shop. Frank, I haven't looked at this damn list at all. I'm really looking forward to being surprised, hopefully pleasantly, by things on this list. I'm in a really happy, optimistic mood, and I feel that this podcast is only going to prolong that. So on with it, Mr. O'Rourke.
Yeah, we're going to break this down into a few tiers here. Obviously, it's the top 50, apparently in order, heels in wrestling history, so we can obviously talk about the merits of these people being on the list, you know, whether they should be moved up or down and such. Getting to the first 10 people on the list here. Number 50, Dave Batista. Number 49, Macho Man Randy Savage. Number 48, Vicky Guerrero. 47, Mark Henry. 46, The Iron Sheik. Number 45, Andre the Giant. At 44, Eric Bischoff. 43, Eddie Guerrero. 42, Brock Lesnar. And 41, Kane. Now, as we talk about the initial tier here, there's already so much. There's so many smiles and laughter around the table already before we even get into the nuts and bolts of this list. So, I don't know who wants to jump in first here, but you look like a bunch of rabid dogs.
I think, first of all, off the bat, is what is the criteria for a list? You know,
yeah,
I mean?
And this is the thing that actually would be interesting to kind of talk around the table, not necessarily to go into, I mean, obviously our views about what kind of where guys should be ranked will come out in time as this podcast goes on. Anomalies, I should have worded that differently.
Anomalies from the top
ones
10.
That feel like they're freaks that shouldn't be there.
Alright, well, what's Vicky Guerrero doing there?
Well, you mentioned freaks, so, you know, Kane?
The 41st best 41st heel in best the history heel. Of the business.
Well, he's been there a long time. I'm sorry, that's the only devil's advocate I'm going to do this. I'm done, sorry.
With someone like Ken, I wouldn't be shocked if that was their criteria. No. Oh, he's been a good hand. He's been around a long while. Let's put him on the list for some props.
I can kind of... I could probably make an argument for Kane. Importance in the Attitude Era, that short period of time, which is then has lingered around for afterwards. But Vicky 48, so, and same for Batista, actually, you know, a moment in time, I can understand it.
Batista was actually only a main heel for a very short window of time, because he meant nothing in Evolution. He wasn't going to be on this list in terms of quality.
You say Evolution, I think that's why he's there. It's to legitimise later picks. I think late, when we get to Orton, who's actually further down the list, but we'll get to him a bit as well. Huh. It seems like he's put. It seems they're there because maybe it backs up Triple H later on, I don't know.
Possibly, yeah. I think there's possibly something to that. I mean, let's face it, Batista's not going to be on there for his Deacon Batista stretch.
No.
You know, he's not going to be there for that brief turn before he quit the first time round, because, you know, how long was that really? A matter of months?
Yeah, it was about 5 months.
Yeah, something like that. And again,
a little bit more.
Recently, we're talking again a period of, you know, sort of 5 to 6 months again. So there's no sort of longevity of a heel run there to think that he would be there in any stretch.
And all of his key money making moments was a babyface.
But by the same token, he's three lower than Mark Henry. The fuck is that?
And he's only one lower than number 49, Randy Savage. Does anybody else see this as the most ridiculous thing in the world, by the way?
I don't know where to start.
Yeah, me either. This is why I was thinking maybe we should run down the first five and not the first 10 to begin with. Because when you look at these guys, it's like Randy Savage is the 49th best heel of all time. He did one of the best buy rates of WrestleMania 5 as a heel.
Yeah, just, if you can remember, Liam, what was the buy rate on North American buys?
797,000 buys.
Yeah, that's North American buys alone, folks, in the year 1989.
Yeah, the culmination of the Mega Powers feud with Hogan, where obviously he was the key heel, he was champion for a year.
And so to just think about some of those names again, not to belabor the point, but some of the names that are considered better heels than Randy Savage according to this list. We've got Mark Henry.
No.
Vicky Guerrero.
Absolutely not.
Good. Kane.
Okay, we'll get to Kane. We'll get to all of them, but it's just like, just for the Savage comparison, Vicky Guerrero, in terms of like heat in the building, I guess, is the argument here.
Well, thing is a kind of authority figure thing, is like your criteria is, you know, is what it is. If somebody can, if you can get a monkey to come out and say lines, they can be a WWE authority figure.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, she did. She's absolutely got reactions in the building. But, I mean, what does that mean?
It never translated to anything tangible,
no,
I don't think.
Of course not. That's the problem.
No, and I think, and I'll try and be as respectful as I can here, in all seriousness.
Oh, Jesus.
That's always a good precursor.
No, it really isn't, I assure you. I always got the sense, and people can disagree with me by all means, but I always got the sense that when it came to Vicky Guerrero in the heat, it was more of a sort of a, not disdainful at her, perhaps, but just a, we don't want to see, you know, Eddie Guerrero's widow as a heel on TV, get her off the screen, keep her away from this sort of thing.
I think after a while it became kind of a Pavlovian reaction of like, oh, okay, we know that we just boo all the way through her promos, that's our role.
A sort of a parody type thing.
Yeah, I guess so.
She seemed to get over because she wasn't very good. And
the Mike Adam Lee role.
Yeah, Adam Lee, and if it wasn't the fact it was Eddie's widow and they were trying to do right by her, she would have been off TV within a month, I think, to start with. And I don't think she'd necessarily improved from that. She maybe knew how to.
She did get better.
Yeah, she did, but she wasn't like she told a story or.
It never got to the point where I didn't just want to flick and see what was on the other channels, you know? Just, you know what I mean? It never reached that
not
point.
Not the kind of heel that you were captivated to watch next week, kind of.
Yeah,
thing.
It's never the point where Vicky Guerrero comes out and I want, ooh, Vicky Guerrero is coming out. No, never. Not one time.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I don't want to, not to try and jump over the list, I want to try and be sort of as structured as we can here with this, but what you mentioned about Savage, and we talk about the big buy rate he did, I think that's a very sort of interesting segue, if you like, to the fact that Andre the Giant is only number 45 on this list. Now, I know a lot of people will say, look at Andre prior to 87, you know, he was always the big babyface winning the Battle Royals or that sort of thing.
Yeah, drawing as a babyface, yeah. 10,000 plus houses everywhere he went.
But there's no point in trying to pretend that heel run wasn't significant. I know it was more towards the tail end of his career, those sort of last 3 years, if you like, up through to 19, the eventual face turn again at Mania 6, but that was a significant heel turn. I mean,
yeah.
I know we have a lot of fun poking around sort of the numbers that they drew at the Silver Dome, but the fact is, it was, from what I understand, a legitimate around 76,000 people. 78,000, right, okay.
Yeah, 78,000. In terms of like records, obviously, and we mentioned this before on the Best Big Man in Wrestling History podcast, when we were talking about Andre and the figures he did as a heel in terms of closed circuit and live gate and things of that nature for that short heel run. Obviously, the match with Hogan on Saturday Night's Main Event being the most watched match.
Hey, did they get like a 10 rating?
Yeah, it was ridiculous. 33 million people saw that match. So when you think of it in that way, it's again, significance. And in terms of significance, Mark Henry being on this list, one of the best 50 heels of all time.
When was he ever a money heel or a significant heel at all?
He had that stretch, yeah. The Hall of Pain stretch for about
One angle that everyone will remember him for.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's worth remembering, this is the sort of the one brief period in time during what has been a run for the last 18 years.
Absolutely.
Yeah. The Iron Sheik being on this list sticks out as a particular sore spot for me.
Well, I can... Not to necessarily defend him being on the list, but this is one where I can maybe see some logic in it to an extent. And bear with me on this. I can see you've got a wry smile there, Liam. But I think part of the reason he's on there, and it sort of echoes a little bit of what Kieran was intimating earlier about sort of legitimizing decisions within the company and that sort of thing. The fact that Sheik was the guy that took the belt from Backlund and he was there to be the placeholder for Hogan. Can you see where I'm going with this?
So you're saying more like a kind of trying to make a historical significance out of
it? Yeah, it's sort of the historical reality. Footnote.
Don't you think that this... Sheik's one of those guys that I just don't get in the sense of WWE gives him so much... I don't know, he's so much more of a historical figure in the way that they place him. He's always mentioned in these things, this kind of historical heel figure. And his actual run as a heel, I mean, pretty much all he's got to his name, in terms of the WWF, is the fact that he was the right guy in the right place at the right time to beat Backlund, the boot camp match with Slaughter, and the rest of his you know, high points as a heel run, yeah, is run as Mid-Atlantic champion. But then, he wasn't a money player. He was being fed... He was the heel of the month in most territories.
Are you suggesting that his and Nikolai Volkov's tag team title win at WrestleMania 1 wasn't newsworthy?
I think that's exactly what I'm saying, Carl. Randy Savage at 49 stands out to me as the most, besides some notable omissions from this entire list, which we will get to later on. Savage, not just his WF run, but obviously his run in Memphis against Lawler as well. How he's 49, but behind some of these guys, kind of really...
Where would you say in the top 10 for Savage?
I think top 10, top 15, something like that, maybe around that. I think there might be more historically significant heels over a long period of time.
I'm obviously going to have to see the whole list before I can really talk to that, but he's up there, isn't he? You can't say he's not up there.
I was going to say, certainly no one around this table would say that he's not deserving of being on the list, and we'd certainly all put him higher than 49.
Before we continue, can I just check, just because this is a WWE list, is Ricky Steamboat on this fucking list? I'm curious.
Is a heel?
No. Exactly. We never fucking know with this list. Fuck. Sorry.
Oh, well, Vince might have thought of him as a heel for asking for time off in 87.
There you go.
Bischoff at 44. Pure performance. I love Bischoff.
Bischoff. I was on the defence, so as you, I'm all for Eze. ATM Eric, which is to do with being a human cash point, not his sexual activities at the golf club.
Really?
It's true.
You learn something new every podcast.
I was doing my research.
Good
obviously.
Man.
Eric's got to be higher. As a pure performer, Eric's got to be higher. And even in that, it's significant for like the NWO and stuff. But this is where 44 Bischoff is up for his WWE EF.
Again, they're claiming wrestling history. Okay. And you'll see that in some of the later picks as well. Brock Lesnar 42, Kane 41 stand out as a point of consternation for anyone else around this table, or just me?
It depends when the list was written as far as Brock Lesnar's concerned, because I mean, I think his current heel run is interesting enough to warrant movement in any of these lists, in my opinion. But even then, 42.
Kane has no business on here.
Well, I was just trying to keep you away from Kane for 5 seconds, man. Well, we have bullied the shit out of Kane on this podcast over 18 episodes.
And rightly so. outside of a 6-month window, the fire does not burn for Kane. He had a brief moment in time where he was relevant in a feud with The Undertaker, and since that time he has been lingering around like a steaming shit.
I disagree, but I don't want to get hurt.
With could you make an argument for Kane at least being on the list?
No.
No.
I'm trying.
Give it a go.
I'm trying to make it.
Be objective.
Go on, give it the old college try.
Would you can make an argument for Kane, given okay longevity, impact when he came in, that time frame when he came as well, and interaction with Austin and Taker. So money for you. There's money involved. No.
I don't think so.
Kane's fucking terrible. I'm not. I don't know.
the thing with Kane, and there are many, but the thing with this is. That first 6 months that you alluded to, Carl, is so strong that a lot of people have got extremely fond memories of the Kane character as this all-time legendary monster heel, when really there wasn't that long that he was actually that strong for.
The thing is, and to that point, and this speaks very well to what you've said there, a good friend of mine, and if you're listening, you know, David Lamb, you know who you are out there.
So does everyone else now.
He genuinely said to me, probably what was it, a little over 4 or 5 months ago, he was genuinely pleased because it's Kane with the mask back on now. Like, that made a fucking difference.
The only one that we really haven't mentioned, 43, Eddie Guerrero. Any comments on Eddie's placement on this list in terms of being on there in general, or his placement against some of these other characters in wrestling history?
I'm going to bring up Eddie now. Obviously, you actually brought up Eddie, but I want to use Eddie to bring on some people who aren't on the list, because I think it's quite apropos.
Spoilers,
yeah. Where's Shawn Michaels? Where's The Rock? Where the fuck is Kurt Angle? And if you're gonna go,
I just realised that Shawn's not on this list. Why the fuck is Shawn Michaels not on this list?
Ladies and gentlemen, this has been a short podcast, but we can't fucking do this anymore.
The point being is, I'm sure their rationale will be on some kind of face list, maybe. Like, we're not gonna have.
Yeah.
But
I could buy that, but then how do you remember Eddie a lot of the time in the WWE run? Particularly.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
That's my point.
That's his legacy. No,
I'm sorry.
And that's
it's all right. I'm not used to people agreeing with me.
No. I'm 100% with you there, Kieran. I think the thing is, even during his sort of attempted heel stint, if you like, when he was rehired, when he came back, the fans gravitated to him. Then they cheered when he cheated. He was never a heel in the true sense of the word, was he? Without trying to be too sort of.
Not at that point, no. Later on, when he did the turn on Mysterio, who's trying to be a completely diabolical heel. But again,
it didn't work.
No, it didn't.
It was Dominic's
puppy. And they came out with it, and nothing says heel like selling an "I'm your pappy" T-shirt.
Yeah,
you know,
he's got to make his money.
Even with the Latino Heat stint, and this is probably testament to how sort of good Eddie was, in a sense that people just, or how likable he was, that even when he was playing those sort of characters, people just gravitated to him.
Yeah.
So he was never really a true heel during that, his WWF, WWE time, in my mind at least. Would you say his cheat to win stint in WCW was strong enough to make top 50 heels of all time? I would say no.
Triple A, maybe. If we're talking about a period that brief, though, where's Art Barr on this list?
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
They never put Barr on there, though.
No, I know they wouldn't.
And we know exactly what the logic is there. He never worked for the company.
Mm. Well, again, that's not apparently part of the correct. I was thinking more about the.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are a couple of other people on here who've never been in the WWE in any kind of meaningful way.
Well,
thank you for shooting holes in that theory.
Yeah. Sorry, but it had to be done. So getting to the next tier here, we have ranked at number 40, Don Morocco, 39, The Dudley Boys, 38, CM Punk, 37, The Big Cat Ernie Ladd, 36, Ivan Koloff, 35, Paul Heyman, 34, Abdullah the Butcher, 33, Terry Funk, 32, Randy Orton, 31, Kevin Sullivan. This is going to, again, many comments spring to mind when this list runs off. The Dudley Boys. I know that Joey Styles wrote this list, most likely, but these two guys have no business in the top 50 heels of all time.
I remarked on a previous podcast, and I dare say it probably got a lot of negative feedback, I'd imagine, about how I didn't think Shane Douglas was as great a promo as he was cracked up to be. When you took away the amount of profanity and, you know, any sort of parameters he'd have to work in, when you try and get him to do a more traditional promo, he wasn't great in my mind. Yeah, maybe in other people's he was, but not to me. I think the Dudley Boys fall into that same category.
Yeah.
You know, you talk about the promos they did in ECW and the riots they incited, apparently, in ECW. And I've seen some of the stuff, and, you know, they do cut close to the bone. But to me, it was always a bit cheap. Yeah, you can go and call someone a fat mother, you know, and spit at someone in the crowd. To me, that's too cheap. That's too easy. That's not That's not really sort of a craftsman, if you like. You see where I'm going with this,
yeah,
people?
Yeah.
No, as I said, would you extend that to the WWE run, where they seem to get over by the cheap heat of just beating up women?
That was it. They put women through tables. It wasn't anything particularly...
No artistry.
I'm trying not to be too much of a sort of a hipster about this, and I apologise if that's the way it's coming across, but suffice to say, the Dudley Boys for me do not make the top 50 heels of all time.
My thing with that, though, is while I wouldn't necessarily say the Dudley Boys, I think there is an element of that kind of classic fucking almost panto heelishness that we don't get much anymore. That, you know what, if somebody said, I wouldn't say necessarily Dudley, otherwise I'd probably say Bubba Ray Dudley. I'd say if somebody put him right at the far end of their 50, you know what? Maybe, on an outside chance, because I can really... The thing with the Bubba Ray Dudley promos, and I would say Dudley Boys promos, but it's not really the case in the long run, even including some of the TNA stuff, in which he's actually had a chance to do some interesting stuff, he knows where to hit the audience. You know what I mean? He knows the bits to pick at. And that's the craftsmanship of it, in my opinion. I don't know. He knows
where the cheap heat is.
He knows where the cheap heat is. And at the end of the day, if you make a living on cheap heat, you know what? There is room for that in wrestling. There absolutely is. That's the kind of wrestling I can absolutely get into.
Oh, there is, don't get me wrong. But when we're talking about the 50 greatest heels of all time...
You know,
the
history of the whole business. Come back to that.
You know, in the history of pro wrestling...
I'd have to really lay down, because 50 is one of those numbers where when you get to the far end, I'm not sure exactly where everyone stacks. It'll get more obvious when we get that top 20 or so, but in this 50 area,
I think, yeah, especially this 31 up to 40, this seems like we've got a bunch of guys. They want to
we just like these guys.
I don't know where they got half of these names from, so we'll stick them in 31 to 40 because no one will notice that. People will notice the last 10.
That's the first 20.
It is something that I'll question as well. The WWF run, I don't think they were ever really any good as heels, to be quite honest. I always thought they were bland and flat as a heel act. They were much better as baby faces when they were destroying people, putting people through tables as the cult act. That was fine. In ECW, were we going to grade an ECW heel for like historical significance? You can't. Absolutely not. Don Morocco at 40. This is another one I'm a little bit in on. If you're going to judge Morocco for anything in terms of his late 80s WWF run, then you don't really have much to go by.
Well, Fuji Vice.
Fuji Vice. But if you saw earlier Morocco, like 75 to 83 Morocco, where, and again, the problem with Morocco in terms of as being an all-time great is he was only in territories for a short period of time, and then he would go back to Hawaii and do his thing. He didn't really have a sustained run anywhere, and he's not...
Is he
an all-time great heel?
Would it be fair to say that he's probably on this list largely for the snooker feud and the cage match?
Yeah, and again, Styles, New York roots, I'm guessing, is why he's there. CM Punk 38.
Not for me.
No,
I'm not. Oh, I don't know. I'm kind of a hypocrite, actually. there's so much about Punk that doesn't impress me, but he's good.
He's a great heel.
I just can't throw a punch. His knees annoy me. Maybe having him, if he wasn't four places above Brock Lesnar, I might not have so much angst towards him. But I don't know, maybe he should be higher.
After all that, that's when you get to.
I'm looking at the rest of the list, I'm like, okay.
I don't want to be the anti-punk guy, because I'm a big fan of his work promos as a heel. But at the same time, he never really drew in a big way.
No, that's true.
That's true. And if there's no room for big Kevin Nash on this list, which there isn't.
Yeah, no Kevin Nash, no outsiders on this list either.
It gets tricky with the way a lot of people, most people view wrestling these days. Like, how many people really hated Punk because he was a heel?
Yeah.
That doesn't work anymore.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, I can kind of appreciate Punk's heel run, but you're kind of rooting for him for a lot of it. And so,
but by that criteria, if he's on the list on that merit, where the fuck's The Rock?
Yeah, exactly. It's exactly the same kind of feel to it.
There are a few more in this list that I can understand and possibly agree with, not necessarily in terms of their ranking, but being on the list. Ivan Koloff's an interesting one for me, because I can see that as one of the Russians.
Yeah.
If you think about the context of the time, the Cold War is still, you know, we're well past the days of the Cuban Missile Crisis and all that sort of thing, but the Cold War is still very real, it's still very relevant.
Yeah.
You know, Reagan's in the White House, and they've still got this idea of Star Wars technology and things of that nature. So, and the Russians during the run in in Crockett Promotions or something. You know, there was genuine heat there.
Oh, for sure.
So what years were Koloff's run?
Koloff became a star in the late 60s, and his main run was like throughout the run of the 70s. And his numbers as a top heel were as good as anyone's in the country. He beat San Martino to end San Martino's big reign, so obviously there's historical significance there, and his matches with Bruno were big draws.
Well, that's it. When if you have that big run in New York...
And he was a great wrestler, too.
Heyman, 35...
Rankles you?
The fuck is he doing on that list?
Yeah, it's crazy talk. I mean, again, without giving too many spoilers, point being, there's a lot of outside of the ring...
there's a lot of personalities and managers in this list.
Rate ahead of him, and is there a better promo than Paul Heyman?
I think, again, if you're...
No.
Not in today's wrestling, certainly not. And to my mind, he's definitely... And I'm sure this will get a bit of blowback, but in my mind, he's top three wrestling managers of all time.
Oh, yeah, is he?
I don't think there'd be too much. Like, speaking of managers, Vicky Guerrero got on here, but where's Captain Lou Albano? That's another one in terms of
really?
New York focus. No Captain Lou on this list. And for someone who was so responsible for you know, the WWF being successful and you know, having the top heel manager who would, you know, manage guys like the Samoans and back-to-back MSG sellouts against Bob Backlund, and somehow that would sell out, and it's because of Albano. Probably drew more money with the heat that he had than any other manager in the history of the business. If they need to heat a guy up, they put him with Albano. If they needed, you know, a quick fix around if a loop was looking weak, they go to Albano.
Abdullah the Butcher.
This is an interesting candidate. I don't hate it. But if he's on there, where's Brody?
Yeah.
Yeah, Brody not on there!
No. Hey, Brody did nothing as heelish as giving someone Hep C or whatever, though. So.
Yeah, that's true. Carlo spat his beer across the table there. That's nice and tasteful stuff.
Don't
there.
Don't touch my oaken table.
Here's the other thing as well. 33, Terry Funk.
I know.
That's just frankly disgraceful. there's no other way about it. It's disgraceful.
Yeah, him and Savage are the two major outliers.
I am sure there are 32 better candidates under him, Carl. Keep the faith. I am absolutely certain that number 32 will definitely be better than Terry Funk.
Number 32, Randy Keith Orton.
Fuck.
Yeah, but he's only in the list to legitimise current eras.
He is.
Don't defend this fucking list.
I'm not defending it. He's explaining it.
You're implying that there's a reason behind it. I don't think
it's not
fucking,
my list.
It's a fucking dartboard and a bunch of fucking names. No,
but Kieran is right, and for that reason, I won't sort of hark on too much about Randy Orton. Suffice to say, to me, outside of the Legend Killer run and his stint when he's punting people in the head for the first time, I've just always found him, you know, babyface or heel, I've just found him bland.
The thing with the Orton's heel runs is that it was up to me, it's always been a story of almost. Like, the Legend Killer run was pretty good, but then it fell short because they turned him face. The whole thing with the Viper, the numerous times they almost got it right with Orton, they would always fuck it up by usually having him lose an inopportune time to Triple H. Yeah. It's actually kind of the story of his career.
That's about right.
It is as it seems to be. So I can't really say, and to be honest, in recent years, I think he's been more effective as a babyface.
Probably haven't given him a fair shake, really. He's super talented.
He took a fair shake in a woman's handbag.
No need for that.
This is something I spoke to my brother about recently, and we agreed that, God, it's really hard to hate Randy Orton. When you're actually watching him in the ring sometimes, and some of the slickness and something, it's really hard to hate him, but you know what? I'm up to the challenge. Okay?
Yeah, but to me, he's always fallen into that category of it's got to be motivated Randy Orton tonight.
Yeah.
You know, it's...
I'd take Orton over Punk any day of the week.
Ooh. In the ring, or just as a guy, or in general.
Are we talking heel here? Heel list, or?
If I was the booker, if I was booking a company and I could choose a heel for me to work with, I'd take Orton every day of the week.
Interesting.
Mm. I think he's super talented. He's just...
Oh, I agree,
he's
he
never
is.
Been tapped into. I think Punk...
Well, they've tried for the last fucking time. Yeah, well,
okay.
You couldn't afford him.
I'll have to bring him to Shrewsbury.
To rural Shrewsbury.
My eyes are just constantly drawn to it. I can't help but look at the list and think, Terry Funk 33, Randy Orton 32. I can't get past it. Terry Funk, when
that's your Lesnar Kane.
You just think Terry Funk, the feud he has with Lawler in Memphis, the feud he has with Flair in 89.
What about Funk with Dusty in Florida?
Yeah, all this, the sort of classic NWA, you know, run and all that sort of thing.
My eye!
Exactly, my eye. How iconic was that?
Natural eye!
Yes. Oh, the empty arena match, fantastic. And it pains me.
One of the best heel promos of all time. We were talking before about, if we're going strictly on promos, I love heel funk. Kevin Sullivan at 31, they're strictly for, I'm guessing, his Florida and not for the Dungeon of Doom run.
Yeah.
But again, one of those choices that kind of skews the list in terms of, again, Kieran, to your point of, is there any rhyme or reason? Because it's got nothing to do with the WWF on that ground. That opens up a Pandora's box. But Sullivan, 31st best heel of all time.
Well, that's the thing, to speak to your sort of the rhyme and reasoning. You sit there and before you've even clicked on the link and looked at the list, you're going in there with sort of a jaded frame of mind, aren't you? Because you're thinking WWF list, you're expecting to see names in place you wouldn't necessarily see them, and then you see Sullivan's name on there and you think, well, there was obviously some logic at some point, so why have they just at periodic stages throughout this list just decided to toss it out the window?
I feel kind of like Albert Einstein when he was trying to tie in his theory of relativity into quantum mechanics. It just doesn't make sense to me. Nothing. It just, I don't know what's going on.
Vince does not play at dice. That's what I'm going to say.
But Kevin Sullivan,
this list obviously does.
I haven't seen all of Kevin Sullivan's run in Florida, but I've seen bits of it. I know it was great, and I've sort of, you read about the myth of Sullivan, and if all those things stack up the way they were obviously perceived at the time,
that's the thing for
you'd
me.
You certainly think he'd be higher than that.
Yeah, and that's the thing for me, is that the stuff I've seen of Sullivan's run in Florida, I'm not a particular fan of the character. Not necessarily because I think he's bad at it, and maybe it's just looking back with modern eyes. That's exactly what it is. At the time, I'm sure, and clearly because of how successful he was, it was viewed very differently.
Do you think, because you mentioned the Dungeon of Doom there, do you think, and we mentioned Joey Styles before as sort of the head of WWE.com and somebody would have compiled this list together. Can you imagine, not trying to be all psychoanalytical with Joey Styles, in all honesty, but do you think he's possibly held the Dungeon of Doom run against Sullivan?
By that point,
am I getting too much into the weeds?
Well, if that was the case,
I don't want to start talking about Styles right now because we don't know for sure. We can probably 90% be sure, but
if that was the case, does Iron Sheik get on the list, or does he get deducted for the Colonel Mustafa period of his career and the jobbing for two straight years in WCW?
And what about that period where Kane wasn't that great?
All right, getting to the next tier here. At number 30, we have Jerry Lawler. At 29, we have Raven. 28, the Fabulous Moolah. 27, Paul Orndorff. Number 26 is Nick Bockwinkel. 25, Vader. 24, Handsome Harley Race. 23, Sergeant Slaughter. 22, The Undertaker. And 21, Classy, Freddie Blassie. Probably is that like the tier that you've hated the least so far?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, I think it's not batshit insane. Is what it's not, in my opinion.
Okay.
I mean, in comparison with.
There's a couple here that I find offensive.
No,
but
really? I don't find them offensive. There's some I disagree with, don't get me wrong, but I'm not pissed off about this section particularly.
Why is the Fabulous Moolah in the list of the top 50 villains of all time?
Because you have to have some females in.
Hey.
That's bullshit.
Chase isn't here. We don't have to do that PC stuff today.
Oh. Right. Well, in which case, Carl, over to you.
Moolah! There's no business for Moolah being on this list for me at all. The whole thing of she was the women's champion for 500 years. Yeah. At no point did she draw. At no point was women's wrestling seen as anything more than a novelty because of the way that she dealt with it as a promoter of all. And maybe in terms of like real life, people not liking her. Maybe she's on the list of heels. But
Wendy Richter hates her.
Exactly. She's not the only one.
Yeah, but we can't obviously defend her being on the list, but, they're going to put a woman on there. Most of the famous, the popular women wrestlers of the recent times have all been face at some point. Mostly face, because we're supposed to like them, because they're hot. And the thing is with Moolah is she's going to appear on every fucking list because they've decided that she's getting this huge legacy one way or the other, so she's going to be on every fucking list.
Yeah.
But
it's bollocks.
I'm not happy about it, but that is not a surprise.
No, it's not a surprise.
Okay,
you're right.
But that being said then, if we're working, say we're compiling this list, right? Basically, a gun is held to our head and we're told that certain names have to be on it, and Fabulous Moolah is one of them.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
She's not going.
With that in mind,
number 28.
She's sure as shit not going ahead of Jerry Lawler, Kevin Sullivan, Terry Funk, Paul Heyman, Ivan Koloff, Brock Lesnar, Andre the Giant, Randy Savage, to name a few.
point well made.
It's a good point.
Yeah, excellent point well made. Jerry Lawler at number 30. Where do you kind of sit on this? Because Lawler's one of my all-time favourites in terms of heel, babyface, promos, work in the ring. I absolutely love Jerry Lawler.
I'd say he should be higher, I think.
I think he should be higher.
Yeah, I completely agree with that.
I'd certainly go higher for the, you know, I mentioned Funk earlier for his stint in Memphis. You know, Lawler's stint in Memphis. You know, I know he was a babyface for a good portion, but he was a heel as well, and he was fantastic.
When
you've been
in territory for 40 years, you can spend a bit of time with
babyface. Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for that.
Even in his WWF run when he first got in during a bad year in 93, his match with Brett was the best drawing match in the company, and he was fucking awesome.
I mean, we were talking earlier about what criteria you'd use to define a heel. Whatever criteria you use, Lawler's there on all of them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Absolute all-rounder as far as these criteria be concerned.
One person he's not higher on in terms of this criteria is Raven at number 29.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Another Styles-influenced pick, I'm sure. I don't hate Raven by any means. I love the character, the promos. I was a massive fan of Raven.
It's a great character, absolutely. And I don't completely hate his WCW run either.
No,
I mean, I look at the WCW run and don't, you know, I don't think, oh, God, it was terrible, it was awful, it was a complete travesty.
The WWF run, on the other hand.
The WWF run's a completely different story. But I look at the WCW run as maybe a sort of a missed opportunity. I can certainly see a case for him being on the list. That may surprise a few people, I don't know.
I actually agree. He's too high here.
I wouldn't argue that.
I can totally see him being on the list, but then I fucking said Bubba Ray Dudley could be on the list, so you can stop fucking listening.
Again, I think it all depends on your personal criteria, and again, it comes out in bits and pieces. In terms of historical significance and drawing money, Raven, I don't think, belongs on this list. In terms, if you look from a pure artistic perspective of what we enjoy,
probably 40 to 50, I think, would be fine as an overall list. I was just kind of distracted. I was looking at Vader 25. I'm not quite sure about that one. Maybe about right, slap bang in the middle.
Yeah, I was about to say Vader in the middle. You know what? I think there's a bit of a safety zone either way. If somebody came to me and said 20, or somebody came to me and said 30,
I was going to say this tier feels right for him.
I could totally accept that. Anywhere in this tier.
Any comments on Bockwinkel? Carl, are you a fan of Bock at 26?
Oh, stylish, classy man. I thought it was complete legitimacy when he was commissioner in WCW. I believed it.
Yeah?
Yeah, I thought it was great. But, no.
I'd love to hear passion from Carl. Yeah. It's such a beautiful thing.
But, no, Nick Bockwinkel. For the run he had as AWA champion, and people can look at the Hogan situation and say, you know, mistakes were made there because it was... I wouldn't say the sole reason, but something that helped facilitate Hogan's move to the WWF.
Was not pulling the trigger on him to be the champ.
But that being said, you know, Bockwinkel had a long run as champion, a run that drew, that was significant to that company. So I think I would put him probably along the same lines as Vader. You know, between that 20 to 30 bracket, I think you're in the right ballpark with him. One name that I am curious about is Paul Orndorff, you know, wonderful.
Again, not on there for that period of his career, the second...
Oh, really?
Nah, or the dudes with attitudes, just so you know.
I'd forgotten about that.
Yeah, with the junk food dog. Orndorff obviously is on there to me for the Hogan turn, and he was a very, very hot heel.
Yeah, it was... I mean, again, this is one where I don't have the figures to hand or anything, but...
The big event?
The big event, and... And the 87 house show run with Hogan that did gangbusters business.
Yeah, huge. He was a very big deal, but again, kind of not in a majorly prominent role. He's one of those figures that, because he didn't headline a Mania or headline a SummerSlam or anything like that, is kind of not really thought of immediately. But he was a very hot heel there for a period of time. Seems a little high.
Yeah, I'd say if he wasn't, just touching on what he's talking then about relevant or maybe historical relevance, if he wasn't there,
would we be calling for him to be in the way we are with some of these other guys?
I was thinking more in terms of his position at WrestleMania 1.
He was clearly the fourth guy in the match.
If he wasn't there, would it make a difference?
I think he's the most... Obviously, he's the most interchangeable person in the match.
Is that just
Orndorff
saying because afterwards he didn't exactly hit the heights and, well, he shrunk away, didn't he?
Well, I think the thing is you could have quite easily put Bob Orton as the tag team partner instead of Orndorff. Orndorff sort of blends into the background of the fact that Muhammad Ali's there. Jimmy Snooker's a corner man. I think people probably remember more than Orndorff being there.
Yeah.
So, but I think Orndorff, I'm not going to say shouldn't be on the list, but again, he falls into that category for me of, he's not a greater heel than Terry Funk.
Yeah.
He's not a greater heel than Jerry, you know, not to belabor the point, but to me, he's another one of those names where I think, of the names on this list, there are plenty that are on there that I will put in front of you and put you further to
easily,
the back of the queue.
Easily.
So you think maybe to have him in there, like 30 to 50, that kind of...
Sorry.
Stick him in there to kind of give a bit of context to the whole list in general,
yeah,
but...
Sergeant Slaughter at 23. I'm kind of curious what people think about Sarge this high up. I think maybe this might be one of those quick ones. Ditto Orndorff.
It's the Iraq storyline. It was in this company.
It
headlined Mania 7, right, wrong, or otherwise.
Pre-84 Slaughter, he's such a good heel. Honestly, he's really good. I went watching that old stuff with a preconceived notion of I'm not going to like Sergeant Slaughter because I never liked the Iraqi stuff. I there was something about, you know, he looked old during the whole Iraqi stuff. I never really got into Slaughter.
Well, old.
But I never really enjoyed him or anything that he was doing at that particular time. So I kind of went, you know, looking at his older stuff with kind of that preconceived notion, and I was actually very, very pleasantly surprised and kind of blown away at how good he was.
So
I'm kind of having a flashback. Have you ever showed me some old stuff?
Yeah, I've seen you, him and Canodal as a tag team.
The Mid-Atlantic run as tag team.
He's awesome in that period of time.
With, Steamboat and Youngblood. Yeah, God, it's all coming back to me now.
I love that run.
But just on a sidebar then, sort of slightly unrelated, but...
So what do you think of Slaughter at 23?
I think it's a little bit extreme. I wouldn't put him this high. Again, that's why I said Ditto Orndorff. A guy who should be on the list, in my opinion, in terms of just talent and performance, I can see top 50.
Is he...
Not better than all the guys that Carl mentioned,
though. No, is he better or worse than number 22, The Undertaker?
As a heel, yeah, that's a weird one for me.
Yeah,
that's actually one of the more weird ones on this list, because and one of the ones that's a more natural one to gravitate to, because I never really liked the Undertaker Ministry of Darkness period. I
was a Taker fan at one point. I absolutely hated the Ministry run.
Yeah,
thought it was so hokey and so contrived. Look at the character we're talking about here. I'm sure some will say, but. But even for the character, because I watched some of this stuff back recently, and the sacrifice of MIDI and all that stuff, and you think, what is this garbage?
Yeah, I wasn't a big fan of the Ministry of Darkness period of time either. As a heel, when he first came in, I mean, what were people's thoughts about that? Because obviously he came in and it was the biggest hit of 1990 for the WWF, which the Taker gimmick.
Put it this way, as a child, it certainly worked on me.
Yeah.
I wasn't hiding behind the settee or anything, or begging my dad to change the channel or anything like that. But it was sort of a bit of a hairs on the back of the neck. It was a bit unsettling for as a character, so it was effective.
About taking it too far, which is what they kind of ended up doing later.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. No, I think you're right.
I wouldn't personally anything from the initial run when he first came in. Nothing there would justify it being this high, and really. So you're talking about the Ministry, okay? He's placing the company at a very important time. So maybe
don't forget
there.
The respect era of him. That was
the American Bats. No. I did forget about
Let's
that.
Let's not forget that. There was a heel run right there.
He was a heel in many respects for different reasons in my eyes.
Yeah,
there,
me too. We gave him what for last week on the Invasion Show, and rightfully so.
Indeed.
Fucking.
I think the thing is to me, and I'm curious what other people's response here is. I look at the Undertaker and I don't instantly think heel, which I think is what you should think when you look at some of these.
It's the Eddie thing, but this goes way further down the list. It's what, because we discussed this with Eddie and stuff, didn't we? This guy's way further down the list, and he is a guy that you look at and you don't think, wow, what a heel that guy is.
Yeah,
that's not the legacy he's leaving.
I think we sort of run the gamut slightly on Undertaker there, but just Harley Race at 24. People's thoughts on him being, you know, behind the Undertaker, the man who as a heel headlined the first Starrcade in the Cage with Flair.
Yeah, and by that point Harley's and again, if you, no one's going to call the King Harley Race the best heel of all time. I was certainly thinking, again, this is another one for me where he belongs pretty much in this bracket.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I'm not a person who thinks that Harley's top Race. 10.
I can see that, yeah.
Exactly.
Not mid-card, but you know what I mean, that mid-chart.
Very good promo style. He was the anchor, NWA champion for a long period of time, and was very, very successful in that role. But, again, it's personal preference. I do love Harley, but
would you say it's right to say there's a legitimacy to the character? Because the way the gruff voice sort of parlays into it.
The physical bluff going by looking at the guy and the way he carried himself. He was great.
So would you have him above or below Brock Lesnar?
Longevity. Kieran's actually crashed Liam.
That's a good one. Longevity's a tough one because Harley had more of that. But Lesnar's probably has he had higher peaks? Well, in terms of the UFC, he has, obviously, but...
I personally put Harley ahead of Lesnar. You know, at this point in time, I'm not going to quibble too much about Harley Race being at 24, but again, if he cracked the top 20 again, you know, that wouldn't...
That'd be fine with me.
That wouldn't seem out of place to me either.
And I hate to take a momentary step back, but since we're on the conversation, in the Big Man episode, we had a very long conversation about Vader and Lesnar.
Yeah.
Where would you put them as far as heels?
All time, God, this is the thing. Oh,
Vader. When a guy's career isn't done yet, it gets kind of tricky, I know.
I'd say probably up until the recent run, I'd probably have Vader ahead of him.
Mm.
But with this current run, Lesnar takes it for me.
Yeah,
it has Brock been, Lesnar. He's fucking great.
He's turned the corner with me on this run. So
yeah, Vader accomplished more in a lot of places, I guess you could say.
I put Vader ahead just, you know. Ask me a year from now that choice could quite easily change.
They can still blow the whole Lesnar thing. Vader's done. Vader's got a great legacy. They can still blow Lesnar.
Oh, they did. They did fuck it up with Vader. The WWF did fuck up Vader and made him look, you know, like a fat piece of shit, as he said himself.
Shawn Michaels made him cry, and Shawn Michaels isn't on the list.
What more could you want?
He'll make poor Vader cry.
If you make Vader cry, you're a heel.
I think Vader. Vader's great. Was great. I just think Lesnar's special, and he's special to me anyway. Fuck you, Carl.
Classy Freddie Blassie at number 21 is an interesting one here. Again,
you pencil neck geek.
I like Blassie in this spot actually, on the periphery of the top 20. It's not a bad place for him in terms of being, you know, again, very, very fearsome heel in his day. Probably not. I wouldn't put him there in terms of his managerial work. But again, in terms of his career,
the guy
that, you know, Muhammad Ali took his promo style from, the guy that, you know, allegedly gave people heart attacks because of, you know, his sharpened teeth biting people's foreheads, Vampire Freddie Blassie. He worked with Ricky Dozan and was a huge, huge deal in Japan. He was one of the hottest heels in the history of Japanese wrestling at that time. He was a star. You know, he drew with Bruno in New York. He was a star everywhere. A solid choice here for 21, I think.
Yeah.
We are on to the next tier. We are getting down to the nitty gritty, as Gorilla Monsoon used to say. So let's hear it. Number 20, Edge. Number 19, Jim Cornette. Number 18, Killer Kowalski. Number 17, Mr. Perfect. Number 16, Sherry Martel. Number 15, Chris Jericho. Number 14, The Sheik. The original Sheik. Number 13, The Fabulous Freebirds. Number 12, JBL. Number 11, Ravishing Rick Rude. Some objectionable choices here. We thought we had some good candidates from 30 to 21. This one has a few glaring ones for me.
Raised eyebrows indeed. Edge 20.
Edge is a weird one, because Edge is currently up, I believe, to go into the Observer Hall of Fame this year.
Yeah, that was a big thing I'm hearing.
And he's been eligible for a couple of years, and there's not a lot of support for him. And he's kind of in that middle tier of kind of like treading water on votes. And it's weird, because it's like, stats-wise, it's like, he was the prominent heel on a WWE brand for a long time. He's had, I think statistically, for whatever this is worth, as many 4-star matches on pay-per-view as anybody else in WWE history. And yet, for some reason, I've got this kind of thing where I just can't rank him up there with like all-time greats.
I mean, I give Edge credit, because when the whole Matt Hardy, Lita Edge thing sort of, you know, came out into the open, I was one of those, and I'm sure there would have been others, who fell into this category of, yeah, he's got heat now because people know what's happened, but that heat is really Lita, and when Lita goes away, that heat's not going to be there anymore. So I give him credit for completely proving me wrong. He kept that heat, long after she'd gone. But to sort of echo Liam's point, there's a sort of, I can't quite put my finger on, but there's a resistance there, isn't there?
There's a part of my brain that just thinks, okay, all-time great heels, and it's not like he had a bad character or a bad promo or was a bad draw or had bad matches. He ticks all of the boxes, but it's just there is something that I can't put my finger on that I just can't rank him there mentally with these guys that in my own mind are the all-time great heels.
So many of these guys, though, that we've already mentioned come from eras that in our minds are golden eras of wrestling, and Edge comes from the bland morass now. That's it, though. I mean, at the end of the day, maybe in a long time looking back, that might help him, because there's been great stuff, but we can already identify that.
Yeah.
But we don't have the emotion and the feeling behind it.
I suppose maybe that's it. Maybe we, when it comes to Edge, maybe we need that element of detachment, because we don't really feel we can judge it fairly because it's been so recent. So there's no historical context to put to it, really. So, if we're able to say 5 or 10 years from now, look back and think, if the business has cratered to such an extent, we can look back and say, yeah, that really was a good run that we didn't really appreciate at the time, maybe.
But the contrast there, of course, is how quickly we can all put Lesnar on this list.
Yeah.
That's the interesting little contrast, because it shows it can be done. It shows it's not just because the guy's recent that we can't put him on the list. Mm. I think there is something else behind it.
Well, is that in terms of Lesnar, because with the MMA run and just the sheer size of the man, he has this larger-than-life quality to him that Edge doesn't.
Carl, that's what
he absolutely is. But he has this sort of mythical sense about him a bit, Lesnar, which Edge doesn't have.
One thing I'll say about this 20, just to jump ahead to 15, obviously we'll come back, but Edge 20, Jericho 15, lots of comparisons between the two of them, similar periods of time. I also think Jericho's probably too high there.
I was going to say that. Yes.
I think a gap of five, whatever that means, is probably pretty fair. But I'd have both of them in the list, but maybe between 30 upwards anyway.
No, certainly the rated R stuff, that he did some stuff that was definitely top quality main event heel stuff, in my opinion.
Oh yeah, I agree.
A load of stuff there for that. But his career is one of those that blends for me. Not this high.
No.
Not this high.
Moving along at number 19, Jim Cornette. I know this is one that you wanted to talk about, Carl.
It certainly is, because I'm not sure how many people out there would have been aware of this, but 3 or 4 years ago, WWE did a similar list for managers, and this sort of echoes Kieran's point about lack of logic, lack of rhyme and reasoning to the list. Jim Cornette wasn't considered good enough to make the top 10 managers of all time, right? Jim Cornette wasn't good enough to make the top 10 managers of all time, but he's somehow good enough to crack the top 20 heels of all time.
You're looking for consistency here, Carl.
I want some goddamn consistency. I know which company we're talking about. Yeah, we know how the mind works, but seriously, people.
The Mid-South run is a good argument for Cornette, in the sense that he was placed in the top feud against Bill Watts with the Last Stampede and Drew Huge. The biggest year of business in Mid-South history was 84 with Cornette as the primary heel.
Yes, and thank you for lending me those discs.
You're very, very welcome.
You've got those discs?
I've got them all. couple of notable ones here that I want to mention. First of all, because they're from the same era, Rick Rude and Mr. Perfect. I don't think should be this high. Top 20 heels of all time.
Rude surprised me. 11. Since so.
How is Rick Rude knocking on the door of the top 10 of all time? On what basis? No.
Maybe they saw JBLs at 12.
Rude was never
because he was simply ravishing.
Yeah, and that's pretty much why. I guess it's more, again, I think this has been graded more on the classic nature of the character as opposed to his run in WCW, Leading the Dangerous Alliance, which did do well, but again, wasn't historically great or anything like that. So I think that Rude at 11 is a push. Perfect, I don't think should be this high either, to be quite honest. I love him. I love Perfect. Okay. I'm a massive fan, but...
In terms of, because we mentioned them already, Jericho then, but by that extension, sort of, would you say that Jericho and Perfect should be in a similar ballpark, and maybe this is too high for the pair?
I could get by into that. I mean, I could
argue Jericho over Perfect.
Yeah,
to be quite honest.
If you probably look at actual achievements, you'd probably go Jericho, but I think it's the the nostalgia element for Perfect gives them that legitimacy. That the flip side to the Edge argument, I guess, really. People remember him.
That's true.
Sherry Martel at 16 is bullshit.
She's a woman. You can't complain or argue.
Nothing against Sensational Sherry. I did think she was very, very good, but not this high in terms of all-time great heels. That's ridiculous.
Sherry Martel, she was great in her role, don't get me wrong. But when we think about managers again in general, I put, you know, obviously goes without saying, I put Paul Heyman ahead of her.
Really? I put Albano, who's not even on the list, above Sherry.
Above Sherry. I'd certainly put Jim Cornette above Sherry as well.
Yeah.
So, is Sherry on this list as a nod as a maybe best female performer or something like that?
And best female heel of all time?
Yeah, something like that. I can see a kind of a leeway given for that.
Maybe, but if that's what they're going to do, they should have an all-female list elsewhere.
It's always about segregation with you, isn't it, Carl?
Okay, we got to talk about JBL at number 12, because that to me is one of the more offensive suggestions on this list.
I would have said JBL until that thing went down on Main Event last week with the Usos and Gold and Stardust. He's one called Gold, just Gold, and the other Stardust. JBL is just hilarious. I just love JBL.
JBL in his current role is fantastic. I love commentary JBL, and it took me a little while to warm to it. At first I was a bit worried, but after a while I jumped on that bandwagon, I won't lie. Number 12 on the top heels of all time, and just as a quick mention, he goes above the Fabulous Freebirds at 13.
Yeah, who did draw money, by the way.
Who did draw money in Texas at a time when nobody drew money in Texas.
So you don't agree with that, then?
JBL!
In a word, Kieran, no.
Thank you.
JBL was the guy that broke Nash's record on house shows as the worst drawing WWE champion of all time.
Well, that's still a record, though. That's a record. He'll go down in history for that.
And there is a special
list
for
things
that
went
Luke.
Down.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. Business.
To quote a great man we used to listen to, Carl, No Mercy 2004 is not lauded for its record high buy rate. It's lauded for its record low buy rate.
See, this guy is a record breaker no matter how you slice it, guys.
His reign as champion was fucking horrible. You talk about cheap heat with Bubba Ray Dudley before. I thought the whole thing with JBL's run as champion was, it had nothing but cheap heat. Yeah. It was so...
You mean like kicking Mexicans across the border?
Well, that was great. But, you know, like, everything after that, where he's just insulting the local town and stuff like that to try and get over, and it's like, it was so out of place.
Just never felt like a main event whenever he was in it.
He was just promoted up the card so quickly from... He was with Big Ron 1 minute, and next minute he's
Big Ron! Don't step to Ron!
He'd held the belt for 6 months.
And it wasn't just even sort of the quick... sort of push up the card. It was where the character completely changed in the blink of an eye. You've gone from the beer drinking member of the APA to Wall Street King JBL. And I love the limo, and I love the entrance music, but it stops there, really. Here's what for it. We're all aghast that he's number 12 on the list. Would any of us put JBL in a top 50 of all time?
No.
Really? I thought we were going to have a quick consensus there.
No, but you say no.
You say no, but you look at some of the names on the list.
You say no, and then you think you've still got to come up with 49 other people ahead of it.
That's a really
good
point.
So maybe we should actually do our own top 50 at some point and decide from there. I don't know.
We are now into the top 10, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to go these one by one for some discussion around the table. At number 10, we have Jake the Snake Roberts on this list. Curious to see what everybody thinks about Jake cracking the top 10.
Well, I will just say it's a testament to the number 5 babyface in Mid-South that he cracks the top 10 as a heel of all time.
That's stuck with you for life. That really rankles you, doesn't it? That's like the third time you've dropped that reference on one of our shows.
The reason it rankles with me so much is because it's the Red Rooster that said it.
This is a funny one because Jake's more prominent run that he's going to be considered for, he was a babyface for most of it, and as a heel... He was never a difference maker.
I think a lot of
This is one of those ones that's been rated on performance.
It comes back to what we said about Perfect, which is that as far as heels go, you remember Jake the Snake for moments, for things like that. And maybe it's more of an emotional thing than looking at the facts again. And as we're still trying to figure out, what monkey at a typewriter came up with some of this shit,
I can understand somebody who has not watched every wrestling match ever, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Say, you know who's a great heel? Jake the Snake Roberts.
Jake did have like idiosyncrasies that were, he deserved to be on the list. Obviously the promo stuff. Yeah. Just in terms of being heelish, he probably blows away most people
on this list.
Yeah, if you were going to, you know, cast a film and who do I want to play a bad guy, Jake would be right at the top of that list. But in terms of significance, pales compared to a lot of people on the list.
So. I mean that's the thing you mentioned there, where someone would look and just sort of say off the top of their head, you know, he's a great heel, Jake Roberts. Well, he was great in the role. They're not wrong to say that. As brief as the run was, towards the end of his first WWF run, that run from the summer of 91 through to the spring of 92, I thought he was fantastic.
He was
a great heel. The promos were brilliant, and to Kieran's point, sort of the idiosyncrasies of the character, even as a babyface, they always had that dark element anyway. I don't think he wouldn't make my top 10.
No, he wouldn't make my top 10 either.
He'd make my list.
Yeah,
but he wouldn't make my top 10.
That great run where people are probably going to point to is Jake's peak as a heel in, you know, like I said, late 91, didn't draw the feud with Savage on the road, didn't draw well at all. His peak as a draw was probably it was in Mexico, working for AAA, working with Conan, and that did pretty massive business. So he drew there as a heel. You can make a case for it, but again, not top 10 for me.
So is Jake on this list kind of the flip of Rock, say, not being on it, in that maybe the stigma of, you know, Rock's face, he's the Rock for Christ's sake, so he's not going to be on the heel list, even though he had a massive run opposite Austin, and so the stigma of him probably should be on the list, in my opinion anyway. With Jake, kind of the flip side of that, people just remember the heel persona rather than actual what he did.
I think you've hit the nail on the head there.
Yeah, it's almost like the sort of the almost anti-Guerrero to an extent, in that people always associate, you know, with Guerrero, they always associated the sort of a lighter side to him. Mm-hmm. With Jake, they always associated a darker side to him.
Yeah. Moving on to number 9 here, Gorgeous George makes the top 10. A very important figure historically speaking, and I think that's probably the best case you can make for him. With the advent of television, Gorgeous George with the bleach blonde hair and being the human orchid and being like the first larger than life kind of heel personality and really setting a trend, I think that he's probably here. Again, based more on historical significance than anything else. I mean, again, extremely influential, though.
Yeah, and originality points.
Originality, yeah.
Yeah, incredibly flamboyant.
Moving along to number 8 here, Bobby the Brain Heenan, the highest manager ranking on this list. Not the highest personality ranking, but the highest manager ranking. Bobby Heenan, the number 8 heel of all time. How do you guys feel about this?
I don't think you could really argue against Bobby really being anywhere on the list. If he was one, you could argue, I think. But the flip side is the Heyman comparison again, and the distance between those two is ridiculous. But I know I love Bobby, so
I love Bobby Heenan.
I would this may be a first for our podcast where there's a bit of a disagreement between me and Kieran, perhaps.
Ooh. Oh, here we go.
But I mean, to me, Bobby Heenan certainly top 10. His work as a heel manager is fantastic, predating his WWF.
AWA, to be honest, I think
as Bockwinkel's.
Yeah, you know, and even before that, he was as important as anybody else in the AWA for years in terms of drawing money as a heel.
Yeah, he was brilliant there. We all know about his WWF run. We don't have to go into great detail about that. It's common knowledge. His commentary work as a heel commentator is fantastic. I know there's a slapstick element to it, but it's still in keeping with heel tendencies, and I think it's brilliant and a brilliant foil for Monsoon. I will state now for the record, I put Bobby Heenan as a manager, as a heel manager, ahead of Paul Heyman.
No, I would too. That's why I said you could argue. Actually, no, I'll go Heenan 1, Heyman 2 is in terms of managers, absolutely. It's more the distance between Heyman 35.
Sorry, I've misconstrued that. I absolutely agree with
that. Oh, wouldn't, I got my hopes up.
I know, I was trying to build a conflict there, and these fans have already been robbed without the trial, so I didn't mean to mislead you there further. But yeah, I'd agree with that. The gap, you know, they're not oceans apart, don't get me wrong.
Number 7, superstar Billy Graham, one of those charismatic people on the list. Like, we get into like, you know, uber charisma here anyway, but in terms of the amount of guys that have emulated Billy, you know, an individual or been inspired to get into the business by somebody,
Hulk Hogan being the biggest name.
Yeah, again, we mentioned Jesse there's so many that always point to to Billy Graham as the person that hooked them, Paul Heyman too. Where do you rank him as a heel on the all-time list? Because his main heel run as WWF champion lasted a year.
It did, and it did great business as well.
It did great business.
So in terms of finances, the numbers are there.
After it ended, he didn't mean that much ever again. It was a real sharp fall off a cliff there for Billy Graham. But
well, hold on, he had a triumphant return in 1988.
Dude, he broke his hip doing a bear hug.
Oh yeah.
So what are you saying? You go higher? I wouldn't put him higher.
I wouldn't go higher.
Fine, I think. I wouldn't go higher, but I would maybe put him back a little bit. And I'm a big Billy Graham fan, but I'd maybe put him back a little bit in terms of more people had more longevity.
I'd put Bobby Heenan ahead of Billy Graham.
Yeah, probably drew more money over a long period of time. But then again, yeah. Alrighty, at number six, because you had to get in there somewhere. Triple H.
I vaguely remember in a previous court case, actually the previous court case, Mr. Luke Edwards and I defended Triple H for various crimes against professional wrestling. You got to remember, he was the lead heel during the biggest year in company history, 2000.
Yeah.
He's really good. He's really fucking good.
Yeah.
And because no one liked him, I think something took... No, wait. No one liked the guy, but... It was the most successful year ever. Just think about that for a second there, folks. Triple H is really good, and he definitely deserves to be in the top 10 for me.
I always thought he was a better heel than he was face.
Oh, God, yes.
So, I mean...
Oh, I'd rather watch to steal a Jim Cornette line, I'd rather watch a dog lick his balls than see another Triple H face run.
I've got a bad feeling in the next couple of years you're going to be watching some ball licking.
In terms of Triple H, I'm not shocked to see him top 10. The fact that it's a WWE list, I'm actually quite surprised he didn't crack the top 5, considering who produced this list.
He's humble.
Oh yeah. Yeah, he's real humble. He was a lead heel during the biggest year for the company in 2000. But I would argue, in a lot of respects, they were drawing off the brand alone.
Or The Rock, in my opinion. No,
okay.
Well, that too, okay, you know. Yeah,
there's the fact that The Rock at his peak, and the returning Steve Austin to help him. It wasn't like Triple H on his own drew great numbers. He did do very well.
Don't forget that Rikishi heel turn was right around that period as well. And that's a moneymaker.
Higher, lower, Triple H? Everyone seems to think lower than myself.
Can you think of 10 people ahead of him to kick him out of the top 10? Because, I mean, to me, he's not, he's not top 5.
No, he's not.
I could see an argument for top 10 without really a shadow of a doubt.
In terms of the number, I'm not sure he makes the top 10 for me. I think he might be just outside the top 10.
Well, no, I just did that thing I told Liam to do and actually see if he can count 10 people. Yeah, I can. I could count 10 people.
I could too.
Yeah, top 15. That area, the 10 to 20 area. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I wouldn't argue with that.
But yeah, no, I can. I mean, if I actually, count them on my hands, yeah, I can probably kick him out of the top 10 without that much hassle now I think about it.
All right, then, seeing as you don't agree with that point, I'd say in this list, he should be top 5, and we'll come to that in a second.
Okay, number 5 is Hollywood Hogan. In terms of historical significance, I'd make a case for this, because before the WWF had a chance to get Hart, wrestling was turned around, in part because of Hulk Hogan's heel turn, and the biggest buy rate in WCW history was Hogan as a heel. There's so much you can say for Hollywood Hogan, I mean, and the NWO and everything that came from it, so I don't hate this pick at all.
Should this be more incorporating the NWO in general, though? Because how would that heel turn... It would have worked because of the landscape at the time anyway, but if there was no NWO and he just turned heel in WCW...
Yeah.
Are you talking...
Oh, it wouldn't have had the same sort of...
gravitas.
Same gravitas. That's a great... I'm glad you absolutely bailed me out there. Because my mind was scrambling. It wouldn't have had that same gravitas. And I think it, if anything, it helps argue the case for why, in God's name, are Hall and Nash not on this list. Because it's sort of the NWO element that underpins the Hogan turn.
Mm.
If it's a Hogan turn in isolation, it gets the intrigue... It probably does make a significant difference to business. I don't want to downplay what could have happened, but I don't know if it takes WCW from number 2 to number 1.
And what I'll say is, it's not, I mean, everyone so far on this list has been a single person. And it's not like later on in this list they're just going to add somebody with a bunch of people behind them. Because, I mean, we've got rules we've got to stick to.
Hold on. Well, Fabulous Freebirds were lumped in as a group. The Dudley Boys were lumped in as a tag team.
You know, well, what? Yes, yes. But, you know, Devon was put in for his Reverend Devon, obviously.
You could have quite easily had number five as saying the NWO.
Look, I'm
pretty
sure...
Then you're including guys like Scott Norton.
That's more than 50 guys on his own.
Well, they were heels for different reasons by that point, then.
The top 50 heels within the NWO would be a much better list than this. I would really love that.
You know what? It's hard, because it's like... I actually think of, like... long-term heels. Hogan did a lot in a very short period of time in terms of the difference he made to the entire landscape of the business, you know, in terms of what he did and what came from what he did. But in terms of performance, he was fucking terrible in the ring during this period of time. Now that I think about it, it's kind of a tough one for me to grade.
Here, top five. The thing as well is just to randomly point this out, what we talked about with Eddie and Jake earlier, as people see Eddie as a face, see Jake as a heel. Hogan actually has a level of duality to him.
Yeah.
In that you can remember either Hogan, but it's still Hogan. You know what I mean?
Obviously, you know, he was a heel in his very brief first WWF run. You think from his AWA run to the present day, and in that period, his heel spans, you know, just shy of 3 years.
Yeah.
But it's not the NWA, then. You can't underscore that. Just like the Triple H 2000 argument, Hogan's got to be there or thereabouts, I think. Even probably top five. Just the significance of the turn. Is this Hulk Hogan, the biggest babyface of all time, turning heel into the biggest heel act of all time at that point, arguably? It's pretty significant. So I think he's got to be definitely 5 to 10. Actually.
Fair enough. I could say 5 to 10, certainly.
And when you put it like that, I'm absolutely gutted that we didn't do the trial this week, because that is my team, that is the team captain for the defence, folks.
Okay, we're moving on to number four here, the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase.
Head of Triple H, no chance.
Yeah, absolutely not.
I concur. Ted DiBiase,
do you want to move mid-south with the Rat Pack here, Carl, or? Well,
no, because people don't, I know there'll be hipsters out there who will talk about it, let's be honest, but people don't really remember that. It's not in the sort of subconscious. But would you say, I'm not going to argue for top five. Would you make a case for top 10?
No.
Yeah, probably not.
Considering it was the guy that one point was going to have the belt,
but he never did.
Well, no, he never did. That's very true.
He was never the top guy. Even if he was the a great. Again, I think he's on here because he's a great heel character.
That's it. I mean, it depends on your criteria. And if you're just a who's got the best heel shtick, then, yeah, your Jake Roberts and your Million Dollar Mans are creeping up when you're not worried about, the actual statistics behind it. You know what I mean? And if you're, remembering heel characters, you cannot leave out Million Dollar Man for just people you remember. But you got to not look at those cold, hard facts behind it.
Yeah, that's why I'd say definitely on the list. Completely enjoyable. He's also probably phased on this list because it was the Vince character and all that jazz. Mm. But in terms of, I think when you're getting this low down the list, you need, or high, whatever you're looking at it, I think you've got to back it up with some numbers.
So you need the numbers to back it up, is that fair?
Okay.
Oh, okay. So not to put people on the spot in terms of giving me a hard number for where you'd place him, what sort of ballpark would you put him in on the list? Because I think we all agreed make the list, wouldn't we?
Yeah.
Surely. There's no discerning voices there, Luke?
No,
okay. So what sort of ballpark would you put him in?
I was going to say, gut feeling says middle of the table, but I don't know, the way I think about it, that might be generous. I'm not too... probably mid-table-ish. Yeah, 20 to 30, something like that.
All right, so number three, we have Vince McMahon on the list, and there's got to be some thoughts here on Vin Man's placement here on the top 50 heels of all time. Go ahead.
I'd argue the most important heel of all time.
I was actually going to say that, and I thought it was going to be shocking, but it seems we're on the same wavelength. I think there's an argument he made for that. Absolutely there is.
Well, as usual, let me be the contrarian voice. No, I'm just kidding. I I absolutely have no problem with Vince McMahon being number three on this list.
I would have no problem with him being number one on this list, potentially, to be quite honest.
Yeah, absolutely. Like,
He's the one I expected to be number one, if I'm honest.
Austin has to have that foil, and Vince provides the foil in abundance.
Yeah, he's fantastic at his best. And it's not even... He always had it in him, too. I don't know if you've seen the McMemphis thing that I sent you a long time ago.
That is very much the genesis of the Mr. McMahon character, for anyone who's seen it.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Vince McMemphis in 93, the seeds are there. His actual run speaks for itself in terms of, you know, on screen in 1998. I think that this is one of those ones that, again, time has not been kind to, in the sense that he stuck around so long as a heel character and kind of bastardized the original, what he originally was as Mr. McMahon.
Yeah, sort of a parody element crept into it, didn't it? The longer he hung around.
Just in terms of importance, I mean, there couldn't be a Steve Austin without a strong, brilliant Vince McMahon, equal and opposite against him. There's just no Austin doesn't reach the level.
Absolutely,
he is,
you can't have the working man rebelling doesn't work if you don't have that convincing heel boss.
And I say, while the argument absolutely is probably correct that about Triple H in 2000 with Rock and Austin, not the case with Vince for me. Vince is vital to the turnaround of that company.
Vince and Austin, obviously Austin I think was more responsible, but again, Vince was a significantly more sizable piece of the puzzle than Triple H was in 2000.
Austin would still be, would have got over and he would have been huge, but
with the Tyson angle, he was already on his way.
Tyson, but the legitimacy of Vince in that role opposite him, it made Austin real as well.
Yeah.
So it's not just a...
I think the sort of the case, or the sort of the argument you could make or suggest perhaps is, do they have that skyrocketing sort of 18-month run that they have if Austin doesn't have that strong antagonist in Vince?
Who gives a shit about most of his... I love Foley, but who gives a shit about Foley if he's not aligned with Vince?
And to show I'm not playing favourites here, I'm as big a Mick Foley mark as there possibly is, but the heels that Austin is wrestling are secondary to the real feud, which is with Vince, and that goes for Foley, it goes for Kane, it goes for the Undertaker Ministry stint. It's all background music, if you like, to the real feud with Vince.
Vince McMahon is number three. Very, very interesting pick, because better than him, according to WWE.com, as a heel, is Ric Flair in the Four Horsemen. A rather gutless
pick.
Wait,
you can't do that.
Well, I know.
You can't. You weren't allowed to do that with Hogan, but you can do that with fuck this list. I'm gone.
Yeah.
I'm gone.
Yeah. Just as Luke storms out
he's
of the room,
leaving the house,
there, folks,
the door's locked.
He's literally... The scraping, wallowing, and weeping you hear in the background is Luke as he tries to vacate the premises. And I just like, folks, if they've got a spare few minutes on time on their hand, just to backtrack slightly and go over the way I was belittled for my suggestion of the NWO as a group by Luke, and the way you can't do this because of the people it will involve. Well, if you're going to throw the Horsemen in there, let's just be clear on this. You're throwing in Sid Vicious. You're throwing in Pretty Paul Roma. So, you know, Luke, would you like to say anything in your defence?
Well, I'm holding a gavel, and I guess I would like order to be restored in this court. I feel that there's a negative environment coming in now, and I'm going to sentence myself to silence just for a little while here, folks, so I can consider my position.
To me, that's a little bit more of a blanket thing, however. The NWO, obviously, it was what it was in terms of growth and bloat, as Luke once said in our great NWO podcast. But Flair and the Horsemen is number two heel candidate. To me, is clearly the Arn, Ole, Tully, Flair, JJ alliance. To me, that's what they're ranking here. Again, this is not detailed, but I'm assuming that's what they are. I think you could make a better case for Ole Anderson on his own as a top 50 heel of all time, considering what he did in Georgia and everywhere else. But Flair and the Horsemen as the number two heel act of all time,
it doesn't work. As you know, to try and encompass, to try and shoehorn the act in as the number two for me doesn't work. If Ric Flair had been on here as number two...
On his own,
I wouldn't have had a problem with it. So if you have all four of those in your top 50, you know, kudos to you, I agree completely. Flair and the Horseman as number two? No. Flair by himself? Absolutely. You know, the guy who underpinned the Crockett's for years, you know. I don't want to go too much into his sort of, you know, multiple time world championship run, because it all got a bit ridiculous towards the end, but I don't think, would there be much argument to that around the table?
I don't think there's any argument. Top three, without a doubt. You know, when you're naming top three, you're probably they're interchangeable anyway. What I'm more interested in getting opinion on you guys is, it's Flair and the Horseman. If it was Hogan and the NWO, where would you rank those two against each other?
If you're
you're talking.
I was about to say, you've got to stick with the original.
Yeah, classic Horseman.
Classic Horseman, therefore.
And your.
And three NWO members, the initial three?
Yeah.
Yes.
The thing is, they didn't last as an initial three. That's kind of the problem.
I don't think anyone's arguing that.
As a three-man unit, they lasted 3 months before they started everybody under the sun.
Well, I'm glad Liam was around to just quickly shit on that thesis there,
yeah,
Kieran.
Should we just delete this section?
Well,
The thing is, the Horsemen had a run where, okay, there's a select group of guys that are in the position of the most important heels in the company, and they drew a lot of money, and they did very well. The NWO, the angle itself was so all-encompassing as a heel act that it took the company places.
So you'd say, but you can't really separate them in the way you could.
See, classic more as an angle rather than the stable.
Yeah,
I can.
It's interesting.
I can
see that.
Yeah. So I don't know how it actually ranks the answers to the question.
No, it makes it a moo point.
It is in fact a moo point, which takes us to the very best heel of all time, which is Rowdy Roddy Piper, according to the Brain Trust at W.com. Piper is picked for number one.
Use the term Brain Trust loosely.
Indeed I do. This is not Shades of the Kyle Ross list of lists, as we've already established here, Carl. Piper in 85 is at a level as a heel that I think very, very few people have ever touched. He was awesome in 85. The run-up...
Head of Flair.
The thing is,
yeah, not ahead of Vince for me, but I do love Piper.
The thing is, and Liam, we talked about this before. Roddy Piper is so important in that WrestleMania 1 build, and when you think about how significant or how crucial the success of WrestleMania 1 is
where I think
to
the
well-being
comes.
Of the future of the business and the future of the WWF, there's a historical case for. For certainly putting him top five.
If that's your criteria, though, what's the difference between that and Triple H in 2000?
Because Triple H became a heel in the top spot with a company that was already on fire, whereas Roddy Piper was...
He had Hogan to work with.
Hmm?
He had Hogan.
He did have Hogan to work with, but I don't know if Hogan would have been Hogan without Piper being Piper in the same way. I don't think Austin would have been quite what he was without McMahon.
Interesting.
So I think that's the value of Piper in that role. Honestly... Having said what you just said, if Roddy Piper's not there to do those frankly racist promos on Mr. T, and if he's not there to jab Hogan the way that he did, and kind of not really back down and be the hot heel that he was at the time, who fills that role? If Orndorff's in that spot, does it do as well?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, Orndorff doesn't cut the mustard. Cowboy Bob doesn't cut the mustard. Thinking about that roster at the time, who would it have been?
You got me. I think again, perfect guy in the perfect place at the perfect time with the perfect skills to be everything he needed to be.
So to that end, do you think he's a worthy number one? Because I absolutely agree with everything you say wholeheartedly, and yet I'm not sure I'd put him number one.
I wouldn't put him number one.
Top
personally.
Five.
Top
for
five.
That run,
is
the case so important? Is it so significant that it's enough to get him into that top five?
Piper at number one, I just seems a little... I don't know if I can call him the best of all time. To me, it's between... Oh, God damn, this is tough.
You know what? It's nice that we've got to a point in the list where it actually is fucking tough.
Yeah,
you know,
we got to
nice
a point in this list.
The top fucking three, we finally got to the point where some thought may have gone in.
Yeah. I think on the merits of the case you just made, I can understand completely why Piper is number one. I don't think I'd put him there myself personally.
No.
No, I agree. Historical significance, absolutely, no doubt, but no, not top three. Well, maybe top five. You're definitely top five. But those top five, top three are interchangeable anyway.
Yeah, I actually agree with Kieran on that, is you can make an argument for anyone in that area.
So With that in mind, do you think we would have a consensus on who number one would be? Because I've got a sense from the way we have talked about this stuff. I'm curious. Yes. I've got a sense that we are in. I think we will all be in agreement on who the number on who we think we would put as number one.
I
Liam's not comfortable about it, but
I don't sense Liam is comfortable about it.
I go Vince. Yeah,
I agree. I go Vince.
But with my colleagues.
Yeah, I'm not gonna make the leap of faith and say number one. It's one of those things where to make that kind of plunge, I really want to think about it and be the give it the thought that I think W.com didn't, to be quite honest.
that's a fair enough adult, thorough, thoughtful
so we
response.
Can't agree with that. The only thing we can agree with is Kane shouldn't be on the fucking list. That's
Kane
our only
shouldn't
agreement.
Be on there, and there were some horrific placements on this list, including, by the way, some notable omissions I want to get to here. Kieran, you mentioned no Kurt Angle. If Kurt Angle's on the list, where do you put him?
Can I just as a quick throwaway, I'll say top 30.
Yeah, all time 30.
I was thinking middle of the park. Yeah, yeah.
On what grounds?
I love Kurt Angle.
I know Kurt Angle's great. Now, when you think of like Kurt Angle's run as a heel, what are you pointing to say that guy is a great heel?
He was great as the sort of snivelling little prick trying to worm his way into the marriage.
He was never a heel in a position to draw the big money and be successful. The only time he did was WrestleMania 19, and even though it wasn't his fault, that was the lowest draw in WrestleMania in many, many years.
He's getting in on the Jake Roberts healingness. You mean, you know, because we're all saying that, you know. I don't think any of us would leave Jake Roberts off the top 50.
No.
You know what I mean? In the same way as I think we could put Kurt Angle on based off that-ness. You know, I think it's safe to say people all think of Kurt Angle as a heel, I think. If that's his lasting legacy, is Kurt Angle as a heel. I think that he got his heel shtick. He found what it was, and he used it. It got more comedic at times, and it got serious at times, but he made both of those work. And there are so many memorable moments that I think he gets in on what I'm going to call the Jake Roberts technicality.
Okay. It's fair enough.
We could call it the Roberts Rule.
Oh, the Roberts Rule. Ooh, I like that.
I like that.
Bit of alliteration. We like that.
Pat Patterson would be proud.
Someone write that down.
Another notable omission here. Shawn Michaels not on
the list. Shawn Michaels.
Yeah, the
fuck? The fuck is out of this list?
I actually thought you were kidding earlier when you said
he
wasn't on the list.
One of the most utterly dislikable people in the wrestling business's fantastic history, especially at the end of 1997 when he was just such a dick.
Shawn Michaels makes the top five from the way he chews his gum alone. That's
is that including chewing gum whilst knocked out?
I could believe he does that in his sleep. I really could.
If you watch that back, he was actually his jaw was broken. That's what he was selling.
Oh, so it was just sort of swinging.
It was
unhinged. Yeah. Oh, okay.
He was trying to stick it back on with the gum. It all makes sense.
And Shawn Michaels to not even be on the list is the biggest miscarriage of justice since Triple H was found guilty on the first count and not found guilty on the second count.
Order. Order.
It'd be interesting, because I'm assuming they're going off, they've probably got a face list as well, so it'd be interesting if we see sometime in the future a face list, if there's any other crossovers.
Cause I really don't want to read another one of these fucking lists in my life.
You know, Chase will have a period in about
a
month's time. So.
I feel like I've got stupider having sat around this table just because of this goddamn list.
On that similar note, The Rock. Not on this list for any of his stuff as a heel.
Yeah. No, you can't leave Rock off those. It's a funny one, though, because The Rock, you know, you start by, you think back about The Rock, you think face, in my opinion.
Yeah, for
he
sure.
He doesn't have the duality of Hogan, but fuck me, was his heel run so good that you're not going to forget it either.
So
you know?
Good it launched him as a baby face for life.
Well, I suppose how you look at that, but he massively important with Triple H in that IC title, and then obviously he was Austin's, okay, he was second fiddle to Austin, but...
Yeah.
Still massively important.
Headline Mania.
Amazingly entertaining. Probably underrated as a worker. Definitely should be on the list. I'm not sure where.
Dream Massive Money.
Yeah, I'm not sure where you put him really. Because obviously the spectre of the face. But
now, see, that's the interesting thing to me there, Kieran, because to go back to Eddie Guerrero again, in the same vein, when Rock was a heel for large periods, he was never really treated as a heel by the fans, was he?
Fans loved him.
They wanted the excuse to cheer. So, for that reason, he certainly makes the list. I'm not going to try and suggest otherwise. But I really do struggle with where I would place him on that list.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think actually we brought up, when we came to Eddie, that's when we brought up that these kind of similar guys, you know, how we perceive them. Absolutely, I think he'd be a high, as in, you know, maybe even 40 to 50, but almost maybe it's even an honourable mention, but he absolutely needs to be on there. What such a great guy he is. He's always going to be like, I assume he's top three baby faces. If he's not, but I'd probably kill myself.
and this is a final addendum here. No Buddy Rogers on this list personally offends me as well. For someone who was so important as a heel,
the original Nature Boy,
yeah, and a guy who was one of the biggest draws as a heel and one of the most influential heels of all time. He's one of the most consistent draws from the late 40s to the early 60s. I don't see how, if historical figures are being considered, like Gorgeous George, how Buddy Rogers is not on this list. If Fabulous Moons get on this fucking list, Buddy Rogers should be on here somewhere.
That's it again. And, you know, for Scott Steiner's favourite Nature Boy not to be on there, it's just wrong. There's no other word to describe it other than wrong. The thing is, and because we used Billy Graham as an example before of the heel that inspired others, the fact that you've got him inspiring Flair, you know, Ray Stevens, the historical significance is so pronounced with the person that he has to be there.
Yeah, Stevens should be on this list too. Patterson too. God damn, there's a lot of people you could put on this list if you want to. We have stretched the gamut of W.com's frankly absurd after we've talked about for this long list. But I want to thank everybody for listening this far. We are keen to hear your thoughts on this list and on our takes. So we will be back next week for Kieran O'Rourke.
Thank you very much.
For Carl Jones.
If anybody wants the address for the learning tree, just drop me a message.
And for Luke Edwards.
Would anybody like to buy a gavel?
I am Liam. Hold on to the gavel, because we will do the trial. We swear, folks, we will get to the trial of Eric Bischoff.
Lovely gavel.
I am Liam O'Rourke, and we are out of here.
God, that's the biggest thing I've ever had in my hands, that gavel.
What the fuck's a gavel?